Welcome, one and all, to the second part of Champions, our review of Norwich City's EFL Championship 2018-19 season, and I think it's about to get a bit good. I am Pink and Show and podcast host, Michael Bailey. Hello there. And helping us relive a gloriously epic season across all five parts is a man who only sees numbers in yellow and green, Twitter's very own NCFC numbers, Steve Sanders. Steve, we got some juicy stuff on the way, I hope.
Yeah, I think this was the part of the season where we went from cautiously optimistic to something's going to happen here. So, yep. Plenty to come.
Oh, I love it. I love it. You were. I'm not sure if I was. We'll see if Tom was. In case you missed part one, we've split the season into five chunks and we're going to relive each one with a different guest at a different venue, hear your views, the pick of Steve's stats, and absorb the last drops of a stunning season that saw Norwich City take the championship by storm. And part two finds us here at The Nest, the Community Sports Foundation's new project, hopefully soon to be their new home, and the sort of place that truly underlines the football club's importance to the community. Hashtag build the nest. Okay, job sorted. Brilliant. Look who we have drafted in for part two, by the way. It's a long come Norwich podcast host and genuine friendly face, Tom Parsley.
Hi, thank you so much for noticing the friendly face.
I thought you'd like that bit, I have to be honest.
Well, I do my best to be welcoming to all.
There you go, he said it. How are you, Tom?
I'm very good, thank you very much. I've just starting to level out again the emotions after that incredible fortnight or so of just celebrating almost every day.
It did get a bit like that, didn't it? You might have mentioned this before we started pressing record and what have you, but what did you predict at the start of the season?
I'd said that this was a squad that would just about get into the playoffs with a better manager.
Wow. Well,
which I could pretend. I could go onto alongcomenorwich.com and delete the article, which also included me predicting Sheffield United getting relegated.
I mean, fairness, getting 2-2 is pretty good. I mean, would Norwich have broken 100 points then with a better manager, do you think?
Probably not.
Spoiler alert, by the way. Can you assess City season in a few sentences?
Yeah. Would you like me to now?
Yeah. Now is a good opportunity, I think, actually.
Before the end of the question. No. Surprising from staff through to players, just a series of unexpected turn-ups for the books, going against everything from a numbers point of view, because, you know, from statistical predictions, we shouldn't have been able to do it with the money we spent, we shouldn't be able to do it with the resources we had, we shouldn't be able to do it with the track record of the management team or the staff. So yeah, I think it is just a series of pleasant surprises.
Well, in that case, shall we get on with the pleasant surprises? And we start off this part two at Derby with a 1-1 draw. How terribly exciting. Now, curiously, this was the only league game I missed all season in terms of being there in person. And for me, I have to be honest, this was the one, bizarrely, where I thought that they've got something about them. They're mainly because they just went about the game in such a positive manner. They created really good chances. They played really well away from home against a side that was, well, decent manager, well put together, and had real energy. And I guess it was maybe just being a little bit separated from work for the evening, but I was like, they look really good. And it almost surprised me. But, you know, that from a 1-1 draw where they probably should have won, to be honest, but for Craig Bryson's sort of shying away thigh. How did you think?
It was really impressive. I watched it from afar, stream-wise. And
legally, I hope.
Of course. I always follow. I've got to be honest. I can't say that I thought at that point, this is a team that's going to win the league or going to get promotion.
Neither did I. I'm not saying that on the camera.
You know, I felt that there was still... We were still too easy to stop and break up. I don't think we'd hit our stride there really, and that kind of comes up in you know the game that followed that as well, where we were kind of stifled at home to Stoke. At that point, we were showing really good spells, but they were still far too sporadic for a game for me to really jump on the bandwagon at that point.
Steve, what did you think of it all?
Yeah, I think Tom's right. It was a good performance, but it wasn't quite. We weren't quite there yet, I don't think. And actually, one of the things I was going to talk about was the fact that this is the last time that we conceded in the last 20 minutes away from home, and we were kind of under the cosh towards the end of the game, if I remember rightly, whereas a lot of the games after that, sorry, I say it was the last time, it was the last time it counted, Bamford's consolation for Leeds, but the rest of the games it felt like we were kind of pushing towards the end, whereas this one, it was a good performance, but Derby could have nicked it towards the end. That said, It would have been six wins in a row this. And the other ones were all narrow wins where we beat teams who were kind of around the middle or lower half of the table generally. This was against a really good team away from home, and it was a good performance, and we thoroughly deserved that point. So it did feel like it was a point gained, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, 100%.
I think this was the wobble that we expected.
Yeah.
Again, coming off the back of what had been a really good run, we were thinking, yeah, but you know, you're not going to go 6, 7, 8 wins on the bounce. What kind of team does that? And at that point, that would have been very, very out of character for us. So you would, again, if you sat down and went through all the fixtures at the start of the season, you would go Derby away midway through the season with the kind of form that you'd expect them to be hitting with, you know, him in charge, I'd take an away point now. And the way the game panned out, yeah, fair enough. But I don't actually remember there being that many clear chances in that game. It was quite stodgy. Like it didn't feel like it wasn't loads of bars being hit and like goal line clearances or anything.
There was one which was Cantwell just before half time. I think it was Pookie who played him in, and it would have been his first goal for the club, and he just snatched at it and hit it straight at the keeper. But that was I think you're right. That was the only one.
And you compare that to almost anything from kind of February onwards, where you go, well, here's the 9 goals that we missed, you know, because we were just creating just constant in waves.
Indeed. Well, let's put it down to the buds of success, as I saw it anyway. Norwich followed that up then with the visit at home from Stoke, which was what we can now officially classify as a rare home defeat, and to a own goal in a game where Norwich, still, you know, they dominated it. They didn't have that many. I think there were 2 or 3 really gilt-edged chances, but, you know, generally they shouldn't have lost 1-0, and you kind of thought it was just one of those tough old days at the office. But likewise, against the Stoke side, who probably quite used to, even though they were struggling, they were used to shutting up shop and seeing how long they could ride games out, because they did it all the season before in the Premier League before they got relegated.
Yeah, well, this game was my... I suppose you'd call it Michael Bailey Leeds Twitter moment, because I posted it was the lowest share of possession of any winning team at Carrow Road for, I think it was 2 or 3 years, 31.1%. And of course, I kind of did it innocently, but then Stoke have this history of winning without having any of the ball from the Pulis days. So they were very much talking about it, of, well, you can't win with having the ball. And to be fair, they were right, because we had all the possession, but like you say, we didn't create a lot, and although Stoke were lucky to win, they did see it out pretty well.
Yeah, they did manage it. I mean, what I would say is you can win 1-0 via an own goal without having touched the ball all game, if you want, even though it physically could happen, I suppose, to a degree. But it was a funny one, wasn't it? Because again, the crowd reaction was probably the other thing that the game is memorable for, in terms of, we hadn't really seen that before, had we? No, Norwich losing a game like that, but everyone seemed to really appreciate what had happened for 90 minutes, even though they lost.
Yeah, I think it was the way in which they kept on coming and coming and coming, even though they weren't like the gilt-edged chances. The fact there'd been a good run of performances at home up to that point, and I think anyone could see, even people who edge on the half-empty side of the cup like myself, that if you have battered a team for that long, sometimes it just genuinely isn't your day. That was an example, though, again, that and the Derby, that was a period of the season where I was thinking, we're still too easy to stop. You know, it's too easy to blunt us. If you're going to play the football that says we're going to have the ball the whole time, then you have to find ways to break down teams. You go, fine, have it, I don't care. And obviously at that point of the season, we hadn't quite done that. We hadn't got the right combinations in the right areas to do that with the personnel. We, you know, obviously we settled on different personnel later in the season, but you're right, that was maybe the start of us starting to realise, actually, Carrow Road is going to be with these players for 90 or 98 minutes, you know, come rain or shine, whatever's happening on the pitch, we really are staying behind them. But a lot of that is through the effort of the players and the fact that they kept on producing. It does make it a lot easier, but I think the chemistry was really starting to kind of fire them.
Well, should we talk about where it all started with along come Norwich? It wasn't just you guys, of course, because it was the Barclay and Norwich, and other guys. Well, and the club obviously had to back it as well, because I remember, if we take it back to the season before, no one was allowed flags in the ground.
Yeah, so the John and Andy, who deserve the lion's share of the credit from a long come Norwich point of view, from working with Thomas and the others at Barclay and Norwich, it was very much bit by bit. They were allowed something like 50 flags And they had to be exact heights and exact widths and exact materials, and that all of that specification had to go backwards and forwards with the club before they were allowed to have it in one half a block. And it started out in A block, and then gradually we had that huge surfer banner, Pride of Anglia, at the Ipswich game, and that was a real kind of moment where you thought, oh, the club is really buying into this now, and really what the club over the course of the season changed their stance even within those few months. From, again, earlier in the season we were allowed more, but still having to really fight to say, honestly, it makes you look good if we do this. We're not just doing it for the fun of it. They started to recognise how much response they were getting, and it was around that time of the season when the picture that the club official Twitter and the pictures on the club sites, etc., and in the programmes that were being used of the preceding games was a shot of the Barclay with all the flags. And you go, yeah, so you're using that to show, look how great it is to come to Carrow Road. Maybe work with us to try and do it. And to Ben's credit, I mean, you know, Ben made sure that there was a top-down adoption of it. So Delia and Michael have been hugely supportive from day one, as has Tom Smith as well. But Ben
Kensel.
Yeah, Ben Kensel, yeah. Specifically made it clear that if anyone was going to play, oh, well, I might have to refer that up. That game was kind of taken on. Well, there was no one at the club because they, well, I don't know what senior management would think. Well, senior management are on board. Zoe loves it. Everyone's behind it. Stuart Webber said in interviews that he loved it. So, that was the period of the season where it got enough momentum that the boys, Andy and John, who you know work on the designs and the choreography of all the flags and stuff, they started to be even more ambitious about, well, maybe we could ask for this and maybe we could ask for that. And we started to get more yeses than noes.
I mean, it is the sight of this season and the way that the Barclay basically transformed, and we obviously had the scarves that were being held up at the start of the game. That was away from home and across the entire ground, and as fans you must be hugely proud about having that sort of influence on the ground. And I guess sometimes there's criticism that comes with it too, because like any fans, people don't want to be imposed on or think they're being dictated to. So that's a difficult balance, isn't it?
Yeah, Lorne and Punt are the two that have had the huge, you know, they've put all the hard yards in, and I chair the podcast with them and work on the website, etc. But I'm immensely proud of them because they've put so much of their time and passion and hours into it, and there's so many. We put a tweet out recently about all of the individual volunteers, because it isn't just, if it was just the two of them it would take them a week. You know, we have between 7 and 10 people coming an hour and a half, 2 hours before kickoff to come in and put all those flags out and set it up. For the Ipswich display, for example, there was more like 15 of us, you know, putting that big banner all out, making sure it was all fine, and then putting all of the flags in all the various different places. And to be told by so many of the players during the season, in the podcasts we did and after the seasons, you know, in the celebrations, that they did feel a tangible benefit, and to have so many different fans tweet us, direct message us, and you still get the odd one who says, you know, you shouldn't be twirling heavy scarves, it might get in my good eye or whatever, and that's a genuine complaint, and things like that, that they become more and more in the minority, and it's just the ACN account is just a swathe of fans kind of patting the boys on the back and saying, and the girls, you know, saying you've done a fantastic job.
Honestly, I think it, obviously we've had a lot of promotions recently. I think in 10-20 years time we will look back at this season, and one of the things that people will remember will be that was the year, that was the promotion where we had the flags, where we had the banners, where the crowd really got behind the team. And yeah, as Michael said, it's so much thanks to you guys, and it's a bit of a chicken and egg thing, isn't it? And we could go on about it for ages, what comes first, the players' performances or the atmosphere. There's no doubt that they help one another.
Well, as Lorne always says on that point, there's, if you go into any away game, unless we are properly at the bottom of the table, there's plenty of singing in the concourse. So the players haven't kicked the ball yet. So if you can sing and you can create an atmosphere with a pie and a pint, you know, 20 minutes before kickoff, why can't you do it at 2 minutes gone? So, yeah,
absolutely. Have you got a favourite moment of it all? Is there a bit that sticks out?
I think it was the Pride of Anglia banner against us. That was Ben Robot Canary on Twitter, it deserves huge credit. We had several different designers who do t-shirts and flags and banners for us, but that Pride of Anglia banner was just superb, with Brucey on there and Redmond and Wesley and Grant, and just seeing that unveiled was That was incredible. That really felt like, because that looked like Ultras. That looked like what the boys had been sketching, and that was basically the crux of the pitch to the club right at the start. It could get to this, and you know, it just looked superb.
It did all through the season, just phenomenal stuff. Let's move on, shall we? Go on to the City Ground, where Norwich picked up a fantastic 2-1 win at Forest. They were behind as well early on. Lewis Grabban, I can still picture him now staring up at the Norwich fans longingly, as he'd celebrated his goal, just by staring at them.
He's in the league now, isn't he?
Touché. And bizarrely, Tim Close's double was what gave Norwich the win late on. But there was a chance in the first half. It was a really flowing move. It got cut out and used on social afterwards. Look at the football Norwich are trying to play. This is great. That was a lovely move from Norwich. And I think little did we know that sort of move, Hernandez hit the post, didn't he, at the end of it, was going to be, I guess, embodied in everything that Norwich kind of went on and did for, in reality, the rest of the season.
Yeah, it's funny to look back now and think that, yeah, at that point we weren't really used to that, but it became almost like a typical Norwich City move, didn't it? And obviously would have been probably one of, well, top 10 goals of the season, had Hernandez stuck it. Well, I don't know. Obviously the irony being that the two goals we scored were fairly scrappy type goals, the like of which we didn't see that many of. Obviously Closer, showing his goal scoring talent, scored 4 in 3, one of them at the wrong end clearly, but I think the hardest one was probably the own goal actually. First defender to score twice in a game since Rusted against Man City in December 2012, and he just found his goal scoring touch, and a huge win actually, because I do remember when Grabban scored thinking, here we go, false dawn. I'm kind of glass half empty, as Tom has said, and the fact that they turned it around, again, just gave you the feeling of, oh, hold on a minute, maybe there is something happening here.
And I remember, again, not wishing to revolve around social media entirely, there was quite a positive reaction to how Norwich played from the Forest fans after that game, which is for the first time it sort of popped up like that.
Again, which there was a theme throughout the season. I remember the Bolton lot, the Blackburn lot, several of them said after the games, do you know what, you've come and really kind of doled out a whooping to us here, and you know, you didn't just beat us, you clearly are the best team that we've played, and I think that's kind of, you take that away from this season probably more than the people that were busy, you know, trolling you.
Certainly me. Tim Closer, Steve just mentioned him. I mean, we didn't really see him much at the second half of the season, but you kind of felt how happy he was playing in this side under Daniel Farke in this period, didn't you?
Well, that's Bielsa. The players, in case we get him in the cup, the players kept mentioning him, and I know that you're not going to dig out a teammate, and you are going to say the right things. So like when you got Godfrey and the like saying, well, look, Close, Tim is really helping, Grant is really helping, that yes, they can't say negative things, but they don't have to keep banging that same drum every time there's an Archant microphone in front of them. But they kept saying how much of a positive influence the senior lads were being, and I don't think that any of them are canny enough necessarily to keep like have that as a narrative that they've been told by Joe Ferrari or someone else, make sure you say that to Kim. Do you know what I mean? I don't think that's media training goes that far at Colney, and so I think it's a genuine thing. I think genuinely Tim and Grant in particular, with what was it, 26, 20, 21, like such a young back four, I don't think they could have been as, you know, I think mentally, I think Tim did a great deal of good in the second half of the season.
I think, well, I don't know if your recollection is different to mine, I would have said Close would have been in the running for player of the season before he got injured. I mean, he didn't really make too many errors. He came up with some crucial goals. 4 goals he scored were worth 5 points to us. So he was kind of another one of those that was victim of circumstance, and that he lost his place, and the guy that came in to replace him was so good that he never got it back again. But as Tom's already said it, really, he just doesn't seem like the kind of guy that's going to kick up a fuss at not being in the side. He just wants the team to do well.
Well, I remember character wise when we got relegated from the Premier League, and he, it was the World Cup or was the Euros, and he was due to go with Switzerland, and he had hit back, had something that he could have played if he'd have taken some painkiller injections, but that might have put him at risk. And I remember speaking at the end of season due to the club doctor or one of the physio staff about that, and they said about how he said, no, I want to help the team out, if you can get me on the pitch, get me on the pitch. And they were saying, well, yeah, but you could hurt yourself and you might not go. So you know, there has been evidence of some good character there.
Absolutely. It's just a shame we didn't hear more about his boat, because that was basically what kept Norwich afloat last season, Tim Close's boat, that he was paddling to wherever it was, mid-table, basically. But fortunately, they found a nice cruise ship for this season, so that's quite handy. Let's go on then, shall we, to back to Carrow Road, where Norwich hosted Aston Villa. This was a cracking game, by the way, against a very good side, by the way, and definitely included my goal of the season, by the way.
And the one with the 4 million passes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Never win a goal of the month. Goal of whatever competition. It's probably only going to be the last three or four passes on any kind of video. But
yeah, I think the highlights, the official club highlights, only had the last two or three.
Yeah. It's a work of art.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And you know, we were talking earlier about when did you start to think, you know, this season was going to become something. That was another example of a big team who were deemed to be a big team at that nearly halfway point in the season, but you know, both beforehand and with the players they had available, the budget they had available, and then obviously have turned out as playoff finalists, as one of the larger scalps. And I remember us actually being really quite comfortable at times. Like they offered a lot, but it wasn't. I remember this season from a Tim Krul point of view, as I don't remember him having that much to do in the first half of the season. More of his like big saves seemed to crucial moments seemed to come in the later games. And whilst they gave a good account of themselves and they looked like a good team, again, I don't remember us being too under the cosh in that game.
Indeed, and coming from behind was a key point as well, because in that sort of situation, Villa getting themselves ahead could have painted a difficult picture.
Yeah, it could. And actually, you're right, they didn't have too many chances. There was that kind of, I know I've got various sliding doors moments this season, but that one where Abraham had a kind of scuffed shot that hit the post, and then Aarons did a brilliant block. Was it to deny a Doma, maybe? I can't remember who it was now, but that would have been 2-0. And then the second half, they came out. Rhodes scored quite early, didn't he, his first goal. And from then on, it was Norwich on top, really. Yeah, I mean, the comebacks in the second half thing, obviously, this was two in a row. And we hadn't done two in a row in league games since the two very first games in the Premier League against Arsenal and Chelsea, i.e. losing at half-time to wow. win at full-time. So it was a hell of a long time since we'd done it. And five in total this season. I can't reel the others off the top of my head, but we'll come to them, I'm sure. I think these were the first two this season. And we had more comebacks from losing at half-time to winning at full-time in under Farker, i.e. seven in the last two seasons, than we had in the whole of the 1980s. That might be the nerdiest stat that you get across all five of these. But I thought it was a point worth making. And yeah, only behind 55 and 56 in terms of the number of points we picked up. So something about Farker's half-time team talk, don't know what it is, but the number of times that we came back from a losing position at half-time, four times at Carrow Road, and this was another great example of it.
We've got to touch on Jordan Rhodes as well, because he was played up top on his own initially, with Pookie sort of tucked in behind, and actually, looking back at it now, Pookie was still, you know, clocking up a few goals in that period, but he then had to sort of bide his time a lot once Timo got the main gig. At this point, I think Timo had a niggle, didn't he, after being away on international duty. So it was QU Jordan Rhodes, and came up with a lovely header, and then what was a wonderful finish to this wonderful goal. And he did just chip in with important moments, being getting in people's way, being delivering the goal himself.
I really hope he signs, because we can afford him, and he's one of those where I don't really mind if he doesn't play, and he doesn't seem to mind if he doesn't either. he just genuinely, I mean, obviously he's the nicest man in football, you know, TM, everyone knows that, and he, having him around the squad, having him warming up and acting as cheerleader for the snake pit, he just seems to be a fantastic influence around the team. And he has had 3 or 5 minute cameos at the end of games, sometimes just in stoppage time to you know, wait, because Daniel likes to save his substitutions just to kill time at the end of the game, which frustrates me a lot, but that he has won the league, so I guess you have to go with it. He quite often will do like a 3 or 5 minute job, but in that 3 or 5 minute job, there'll be one fantastic piece of centre forward play where he'll get in behind and go to the corner, or he'll kill a bit of time in a really kind of veteran strike way. And I just can't help but think that bear in mind that, knowing what the recruitment is very likely to be this summer, i.e. people we haven't heard of from the second tier of countries whose football we don't watch very often, being better than anyone that we've heard of, therefore we're unlikely to get a striker in that mould. Like that doesn't meet, that doesn't spell around 30 age veteran striker with like 400 games under his belt, whatever, you know. And so I think he could be invaluable next season to do a few 10-15 minute cameos.
He actually made more sub appearances this season than any Norwich City players in history in a single season. He came off the bench 29 times. Yeah, it was Ewan Roberts in the 03-04 season before that. So yeah, so those 3 or 5 minute cameos, I don't know how many of those were that short amount of time, but he
regularly less than 10. Regularly 80 plus minutes, wasn't it?
But the same as Closer, really. He just doesn't seem like the sort of guy to kick up a fuss about it. It was actually after this game, it might have been speaking to you guys, actually, I don't know whether it was you or the club or Chris, but he gave an interview where he spoke about how much he loved being part of the Norwich City dressing room, and he just sounded so genuine. He just sounded like he'd had 2 or 3 years in places we didn't really get on, and now he'd found somewhere where he loved playing, and for that reason he might be worth a punt again next season. But hey, we'll leave it at that.
Whatever happens, he's had his stellar Norwich City season and played a crucial part in the success, spoiler alert. Norwich went on from Villa to another home game against Brentford. They won it 1-0. Most people have completely forgotten about this goal, this game, other than Emi Buendia's goal, which was gorgeous. It was a massive punt long forward, bounced off his toe, went in. That's exactly not what happened, by the way. Beautiful raking ball, just a magician's touch from Emi Buendia. What we've probably forgotten is that Mopai, at that point probably top scorer in the division, I don't know, missed from 3 yards, an open goal.
Was that at the River End?
Yeah.
Just right under the boat, like Ronnie Rosenthal style. Yeah. I laughed.
Nuts. And you just look at these things going, you know, I'd completely forgotten about that, actually.
Yeah, I had. Very similar. Sorry, just we've given with one hand Jordan Rhodes, and now we're going to take away. This was another missed penalty game, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
And
Has there ever been a player miss that many penalties in a season and not be an utter villain?
To miss, it's funny you should ask. This is not prepared. So only two players have missed penalties twice in the same season this century. Graben, the year we went up in the playoffs, and Wes, the year we went up under Lambert. So all three times we've got promoted.
So he missed two penalties and got sent off for punching someone, and got promoted via the playoffs, but still wasn't popular.
So Graben, you mean?
Yeah. Whereas
in the end,
yeah.
I think he was popular then.
I don't think he was.
You can't imagine Jordan doing the stare up to the away section if he ever saw.
He's one of us. Yeah, he's Ipswich.
I love that. So the point is, if Norwich next time they're in the Championship, if that ever happens, they miss two player misses two penalties in the same season, quids in. I love it. Well, Norwich after Brentford, picking up that win, went off to ultimately end their Carabao Cup run in the fourth round at Premier League Bournemouth. Now, this was a cracking game, and actually although Bournemouth made a lot of changes, they still had what was a very, very decent side. And Norwich played really well. They created so many chances. We talked about the chances earlier. Probably should have won it. Jordan Rhodes actually had a brilliant chance to equalise in the last minute and headed wide. He probably still doesn't know how he missed that. I suppose it's hard not to think of that game and think of what happens next season. But in terms of taking on a Premier League side then, I think it sort of put down a little marker. I hate that expression.
You talk about themes of the season, and that was the game that we in the on our pod the months afterwards we kept referring back to, as that was the game where it became clear that actually you seem to be able to just like whip anyone out and stick anyone in, and Farkball continues. Like that was the game where everyone went, oh okay, because we had quite a settled squad for the previous few games that when we'd been on this good run, and it was like, oh okay, so now we upped the opposition, only narrowly lost away from home. But the style of football and the quality of football and the types of chances we're creating are exactly the same, even though we've made all of these changes. So I think putting down a marker, I think, is exactly what it did.
Well, at least I used the expression in the right context. Mm. And it takes us perfectly into the trip to Hillsborough, where Norwich beat Sheffield Wednesday 4-0. They scored all four goals in the second half, and they certainly took on what they were doing at Bournemouth and did it with style, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, that was up there with the performances of the season. I mean, Sheffield Wednesday were not great. It's funny, kind of thinking back to it, we weren't fantastic in the first half, and Sheffield Wednesday had chances to take the lead. Obviously, all four goals that we scored came in the second half, so it could have been different. But was it the second goal or the third one? It was the third one, wasn't it? The the Vrančić pass to Ahrens to play into Pukki, and that again became like a signature move for us throughout the season, didn't it? And was another one of those moments where you thought, okay, we are capable of really pulling something together from this season.
Especially given it was starting November, which I remember and had spoken a lot about, November being pretty awful in terms of noise. Are we going to come do that one now, or do you want to do it in a bit?
I can pull that one out for you now. It was the first win in 10 games in November and first one for 4 years. So, yeah, it was, like you say, quite often that was a time when it all would fall apart for us, but not this year.
And winning at Hillsborough, which is always good fun.
One goal that's worth mentioning on that game was I can't remember if it was the first or second one where Max Ahrens picked up the ball on the edge of his own area and just went, right, well, I'm just gonna run all the way down the pitch now. And he went past like two or three. And again, that, but even more so than what happened later in the finish, that was one of those games where I felt that performance, that whole game, he'd come of age in multiple different times, but that was another one where he took another step forward, went, oh wow, this guy really is something.
Agreed. And just another quick point, actually, because we've done penalties, another missed pen in this one, wasn't there? We've almost forgotten about it, Mario's pen. We'll talk about missed penalties, I'm sure, later on, but this was, I think, the worst one of the lot. I mean, none of them were great, but this one was particularly bad. But it didn't matter, clearly, in the end.
Mario Vrančić, you missed it. We'll forgive him that for what he gets up to later.
He's done a fair few good things since, hasn't he?
Spoiler alert. It was also featuring a rare Dennis Trebeni goal.
And just to give you another sub stat, most appearances in a single season without actually starting a game in the league. He came off the bench 15 times, never started a match. I don't know. Again, he kind of seems happy enough with his lot, doesn't he, Dennis? And he's got this sort of cult following. I feel like we may never truly find out what he can do, which is sort of sad, but he certainly looked a better player when he came on this season to the games he played last.
Birmingham, Cardiff.
Birmingham was superb. I mean, like that last 15 minute foray or whatever he had, he just suddenly turned into Messi. It's unbelievable. But personally. Yeah, seems like a nice lad, but I don't think he's necessarily got a huge...
Let's not worry about that. Let's not worry about it. He wears an icon cap. What more do people want? So, obviously, Hillsborough...
I want a bit more than that, actually. Like, in my footballers, yeah.
Probably not in their scouting reports, in fairness. Well, Sheffield Wednesday, Hillsborough, the trip for Norwich City fans, phenomenal. They got to sing We Are Top of the League, I think, for the first time this season, it might have been.
Yes.
Whew, good-o. And, of course, that was a very good one. Maybe it was the favourite away trip of the season. Let's hear some of the thoughts of the fans on what their favourite trip was this season.
Been to four this season: Forest, Leeds, Middlesbrough and Wigan. Two favourites out of those would be Leeds away, just because why? What a performance. And Borough away, because when we arrived at our hotel prior to the game, there was team bus outside and the team was still in the hotel, having stayed there the night before, so that was a nice surprise. Again, to see the team prior to the game was fantastic. And Zimbo's clearance off the line again, wow.
Carrow Road then, talking about favourite away trips of the season, lots of conversations come the end of the season about the game that stood out to them. This one, Millwall at home, a 4-3 win. I think it got constantly referred to, lots went on. I don't know how we're going to sum it up in a couple of minutes, but was it the game of the season for you?
This was the one where Michael Bailey, a guy on Twitter I follow, said there'll be several tweets, because I was following afterwards, so I was at the game, but then looking back through, I quite often go through Michael's timeline afterwards, because it's quite funny to see how disappointed and disheartened you were at kind of 86 minutes or whatever, and you're going, but do you know what, getting a point, that's fantastic, etc. And then after the fourth goal went in, you didn't do your capital letters goal save draft template or however you do it so quickly, and Paddy don't understand it, but you just said, yup, I believe now. And that tweet, I remember that throughout the season, is from that point onwards, not just because you told me to, but I think it was Millwall at home is a point where I went, yeah, we, that sort of thing, it's like the derbies, you know, the you know, Simeon Jackson goal. Moments like that, they only tend to happen in seasons like this. You don't tend to get them in seasons where you finish eighth.
No, that is very true. And I mean, I remember, for all that happened throughout the rest of the season, I remember the noise of the Millwall, of that yeah. winner. It was a guttural roar. It was just an exceptional noise that kind of said it from all 6,000 people inside.
Yeah, and it just felt like that. There was that belief that we were going to do it. I mean, I remember when Rhodes scored his equaliser, he went and picked the ball out of the net as if to say, we've still got time to win this. And that's, like you say, it's not the sign of a team that's going to come eighth in the league. It's a team that think...
And that was like the 93rd minute.
Exactly.
As it was.
Well,
there's probably some stats on that, unless
I think it was I haven't got that in front of me. You've teamed me up and I've completely swung and missed, but Team Moose was 97, that was the latest winner that we've had this century. I mean, to be honest, with a game like this, that's just become irrelevant because it's just blown so many records out of the water. I mean, it was 1-1 in the 80th minute before Leitner scored, and we thought that was it. The lead changed hands four times in the game, so they had the lead twice, we had the lead twice. And the other thing to take away from this, I thought, was the pass from Buendia for Rhodes' equaliser and the pass from Mario for Pukki's winner, ultimately.
Yeah.
Just two unbelievable balls under pressure. Normally when you score goals like this, you associate it with being long ball into the box or whatever. But this was just, it was just two class goals.
I think the way... If Lionel Messi had played that ball that Buendia played, then people would be raving at it, because he's literally picked out Jordan Rhodes in acres through about four people. It's the pass of the season. It's a truly incredible pass that led to an incredible finish. Nuts.
Really. I prefer Zimmerman's pass at Bolton away over the top to Pukki.
Yeah, a bit more agricultural, I suppose.
Yeah,
that's fair enough. We'll take it. Fair enough. What an occasion, and as you said, just the chops and changes, and I suppose ultimately a game where Norwich had all their shortcomings, conceded a goal from a set piece, you know, couldn't hold on to the lead, kept switching off at times, still won the game, didn't they? It didn't matter. We could indeed. We've got only one more game from this little group, which was a trip to Wales, South Wales, to Swansea. Won't have to make a trip to Wales next season then. Anyway, now I remember coming away from this game actually thinking, wow, this might be as good as it gets, just because Norwich blitzed them. And actually I remember listening, catching again the other day, the commentary from Chris Gorham saying, well, Norwich has scored against the run of play, and it was an own goal, and that was to make it 1-0. Of course, then Norwich went and to kind of run the game, but I suppose they just were able to make the difference when they needed to.
This was an example of what became referred to in my memory is like a business as usual win. You know, it was just like, yeah, we're racking up 3-4 goals away from home, and you think we scored 4 away from home and looked really, really good, and you look at the stats away from home like this season and what they've been like in the past following Norwich, and we've now become accustomed to travelling in expectation, and that is just one of the most, like again, at the start I mentioned this is a season of, you know, breaking the odds and breaking the stats and pleasant surprises. To kind of get in the car on the start of a Saturday or a Sunday in expectation of not only seeing good football, not only seeing more possession, but yeah, probably score 3 or 4 today. It's crazy that's now the norm.
Which is hard when you're in the season, because you're literally trying to remind people, look, don't get carried away. This is pretty tough. And then they go and do this. You're like, oh, you're fair enough. You got it right there. But and I mean, likewise with Swansea, and it was the theme for both games against Swansea, a good side. Graham Potter really trying to turn them into, I guess, Norwich, but he's still got 12 months down the path to do it, and he's probably not there anymore, to be honest.
Right, so,
I think that's fun, but probably this afternoon. Now you know when we're recording. But I mean, it was a challenge, because I kind of expected if Swansea got themselves going, they might be more sort of round about it come the second half of the season. But they weren't, and probably because they got taken apart by Norwich and other teams like that.
Yeah, I mean, this was my, I believe now, game, to be honest, just because, like you say, it became business as usual. We were kind of routinely taking teams apart. This is completely different to the previous two games, because we were 3 up, weren't we, within, I think, the first half an hour, or certainly the first 40 minutes. and just against a good side away from home. Talk about scoring three or four. This was the first time for 85 years that we scored four in three successive games. So again, records just falling down all over the place. That's how good this team were. And yeah, we kind of didn't really give them a sniff. And a good, you know, a tough game on paper, and we absolutely ran riot again. And yeah, to me, this was the one where I thought, well, this team, it's going to take something good to stop them now.
And it was nice that they didn't actually need the late goals, because as we noticed from the Millwall game, those number of goals that Norwich had got from what was it, the last, from the 80th minute onwards?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, as you say, didn't need it for this one, but certainly used it a few times this season. 23 goals a season from the 80th minute onwards, which gained us 20 extra points, without which clearly we would not have been promoted. Easy to say, obviously, but yeah, and I thought it would be worth a comparison with the Lambert season, because yeah, it's bettered anything that he's done, and it's always nice to remind ourselves that we're doing better than the Lambert years now as well, isn't it? Right, so. Yeah, just another thing that underlines what an incredible season it was.
You agree with that now, Tom, wouldn't you?
Oh, very much so, yeah. We set out at the start of the season the things that we all felt needed to be better than the previous year, and one by one, the manager and the players proved that they were able to satisfy any doubts that anyone could have over this squad and this management's capability.
Which leaves us to have a look at the table as we wrap up this delicious second part. 18 games played at this point. Norwich were top from Middlesbrough. I mean, you could look at the shape of that table. It's not too dissimilar from how things finished, actually, given we're 18 games into the season. But it's funny, isn't it? We were probably looking at it at the time thinking, yeah, but it's a long way to go.
We were, but we were winning so comfortably, and it's hard not to get carried away when you are top of the table. The thing that I noticed from that table the most is Borough, and the stat that I heard when we beat Borough later in the season, that was the first time they dropped out of the top six after they were in it after the second game or something, right. And then they were in the top six for about 5 months, yeah. and then obviously to not be present at all in the playoffs is quite funny, isn't it?
You said it, Tom. You said it.
Yeah, I'm just looking at that table and thinking actually Swansea were doing even better than I thought. Good goal difference, not far from the playoffs, and we went there and completely dismantled them. So yeah, like you say, it could kind of take a shape. Only really Villa that moved up, but this is where we were picking up momentum at this point.
And it would only get better. Two parts down, three to go of our Norwich City season review. Will it continue in such glorious ways? Catch part three to find out when we'll be at City's own Theatre of Dreams with a man known as the voice of this Norwich City vintage. Until then, big thanks, Tom. Thanks for joining us. Much appreciated. Big plans for next season, I hope.
Very, very much so.
Do you look at all those big European, you know, walls and all sorts going on and think, oh yeah, we could do that?
That's always been the dream, and the Premier League is a fantastic stage for us to hopefully get some admiring glances from across Europe to look at what Norwich are doing and trying to start copying us.
That's exciting. About this season though, perfect season?
Yeah, I still think for one off moment, playoff final is the best day in football there will ever be. Winning at Wembley and going up, but in terms of his complete season, the way the fans, the flags, everything, yeah, perfect.
Well done for your part, and the boys, obviously.
Mostly the boys.
But well done yourself for Billy's being here and talking about it. Thanks, Steve. We'll be reunited for part three. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's more good stuff to come. Again, spoiler alert, but yeah, you know.
I wonder if anyone doesn't know what how this is. Like, woken up from a coma. Yeah, I'm not going to go on Google. I'm going to watch the.
I'm going to watch all season so that I can catch the review at the end of it. I'm really sorry if you've done that, because we've blown it like several times. Anyway, we will be back. In the meantime, thanks to these guys. Thanks to Tony, and thanks for watching and listening.